Namaste and welcome. You're listening to the first show of A Woman's World. My name is Purvi Shah and I'm excited to bring you a show about women's dreams and the challenges facing our community. Though a majority of our world and leaders in our community and homes, we don't often hear women's voices. This show aims to change that. Each week we will delve into women's dreams and the challenges we face as a community. We hope to tap new experiences and make a ground for dialogue and change. In light of the recent tragedy of rape and murder victim Jyoti Singh Pandey, we start our show discussing the vital issue of sexual violence in our communities and how we can work together to end it. But before we dig into the show and our featured guest, the community and outreach coordinator at Sakhi for South Asian Women, Sethu Nair, let me tell you a little bit about myself. I currently consult on the issue of violence against women after having led Sakhi myself for about 7.5 years, and I'm also a poet with a book called Terrain Tracks. You can find out all this information on my website at purvipoets.net. That's purvipoets.net. So I'm excited to be with all of you today to continue to help foster vital conversations toward a stronger community. As you all know, our community has been galvanized by the recent tragedy of Jyoti Singh Pandey. This young 23-year-old woman who was studying to be a physiotherapist was brutally gang-raped by 6 men who are now facing trial for the alleged crimes. After nearly 2 weeks of surgeries and hospitalization, Jyoti passed away on December 29th. Throughout Delhi, India, the site of the violence, and our world, protests have erupted at this event, demanding change to India's treatment of women and an end to sexual violence across our world. Here, closer to home in New York City, Sakhi for South Asian Women helped to organize and led a vigil to end sexual violence just this week. I wanted to ask Sethu Nair, our guest today, which we're really excited to have, a little bit about why Sakhi organized this vigil and what it meant to her to lead that process.
Thank you, Purvi. Thank you for having me and Sakhi on the show. The sexual violence that Jyoti Singh Pandey went through really got all of our attention. It happened in Delhi, so far away from here, but we felt the injustice and the horror of it around the world. As an organization that's been working on ending violence against women in New York for over 23 years, at Sakhi we felt we had the responsibility to create a space where we could acknowledge the range of feelings we all experienced as we heard the details of Jyoti's rape and murder. The vigil was really just one event, and at Sakhi, we hope that it has inspired and encouraged more and more people to take some kind of action to acknowledge that sexual violence is a reality in our lives, whether it is holding our governments accountable for inaction, whether it's increasing safety measures in our own community, and whether it's by acknowledging that these things are happening right here in our own families, in our own lives. We hope that it helps us make productive use of these feelings of anger, outrage, and sadness.
Can you just tell me a little bit about where the vigil was? What was it like? Like, just describe it from your perspective as an organizer of it. Like, what did it feel like?
So the vigil was held at Union Square, the North Plaza of Union Square in New York City, and it was really exciting to have such a central space. The square is also recognized for a lot of activity of this sort over the years. It was originally...
Well, I feel like squares and plazas in general across the world are like the place for people to collect. So I can definitely see in terms of what you're saying about just this people's gathering, like how it must have been significant to have it at this really central square in New York City.
Exactly, exactly. So we were very excited to have Union Square as the place to hold this vigil. And it felt incredibly exciting to have so many people show up. We had about 300, close to 400 people coming to the event. And despite how cold it was, I was very surprised and very happy to see that so many people showed up in support of all of the work that's being done to end gender-based violence, but mostly in memory of Jyoti Singh Pandey. Mm. So it felt really great. What also felt really wonderful is to see the range of people.
Yeah.
Normally, it's often women or advocates who come out to organize events of this sort. But we had people of all kinds coming, people across communities, people of different races, different genders, coming and showing up and standing up in support and solidarity.
Yeah, I was really taken by the number of men that I saw at the event, which was really great. And I think, you know, it was like, everything from, you know, old white men to young Desi guys to, you know, people. I thought it was, you know, there were kids in strollers and then older folks and straight, queer. And I thought, you know, that in itself, you know, sometimes you would expect that this kind of event would just have a South Asian women's crowd. And it really wasn't that. So I think that congratulations goes to you and the amazing power also of this issue in terms of moving our communities. Why do you think that Jyoti's death has touched so many people?
Well, I think that the horror and the violence of it all really, really touched us. I mean, we got the information about what happened to her in details and bits in the news. And I think more than anything, not just women, but men also, and all people, identified with just how horrible that kind of violence can be. I think that we all experience all sorts of violence in our lives. But I think that what really captivated us is the horror of something like this happening so unexpectedly, just on a casual day when someone is going to the movies.
You know, I was really struck by what you said about the everydayness. And I think one of the speakers at the vigil talked about how it could have been any of us, right? Like, we all go to the movies. You know, Jyoti was out with a male friend. They had just seen Life of Pi, and they were taking a bus home. And this happened, you know, on public transportation. You know, they thought that it was a safe environment. And, you know, I think all of those elements that you're talking about, how it resonated with so many people, because I think everybody can relate to that concept that, you know, we're just going to an outing for the day and then we just want to get home. So I don't know if you've heard other people speak to that or the ways in which you feel like that's touched others that you've spoken to in terms of the issue.
Yeah, I think that it touches all of our lives exactly in that way. And most of the time we're used to thinking about or understanding violence as something that happens outside of us or to somebody else or somewhere far away. It's easy really to say it happens in India and other backward places in the world. But I think what really touched us is that it happened to a young person who's very active, a young woman who's active like so many young women here in the United States, and someone who goes to the movies just like us, someone who has friends just like us, someone who walks on the street just like us. And for that to happen suddenly and so horribly, I think that it really captured our hearts and our minds.
We wanted to introduce you to Manpreet, who shared an amazing poem of hers at the vigil.
The title of the poem is, Hota hai har ek ka naseeb apna apna. Hota hai har ek ka naseeb apna apna. Kuch hoti hai hakikat, कुछ होता है सपना. कोई ना साथ दे तो किसी का साथ दो तुम. दूसरों की खातिर ही सही जिंदगी जी लो तुम. खुशी बांटने लगोगे तो अपना गम भूल जाओगे. पराए हम सफर में भी अपना हम सफर पाओगे. राह पथरीली है और कांटों से भरपूर. अगर चलते रहे तो मंजिल पाओगे जरूर. दी है जिंदगी जिसने राहें जीने की भी वही देगा. ना हारोगे हिम्मत तो सोया करवट मुकद्दर भी साथ देगा. थैंक यू.
वन ऑफ द recent statistics that we've heard from the UN is that India is the most dangerous place for a girl child to be born, and that in fact by the age of 5 it's almost a 2-to-1 ratio that girls will not survive compared to boys, which is, you know, very sobering statistics. But then when you think about the issue of sexual violence and how it happens across all communities and places in the world, in the US we know that 1 in 6 women is going to be subject to sexual assault or rape in her lifetime, and in fact 1 in 33 men as well. So I think when you look at these really sobering statistics, you recognize that it's not an issue that we can just say, oh, it happens, you know, there and it doesn't happen here. I mean, obviously it affects our community because we're all connected, but I think, you know, it's also important to remember what happens in the United States generally as well. And I think in that with that as a background, can you talk a little bit about what kind of sexual violence work you see at Sakhi in terms of, you know, and often I think one of the other arenas is, you know, violence that happens within the context of partnerships, and if you see sexual violence in those scenarios as well.
So at Sakhi, most of our clients are married women. Mm-hmm. So we see sexual violence in the context of marriage a great deal. We see rape and ongoing sexual assault, not just by spouses and partners, but also other family members. In our youth program, we have a new youth program. And through our youth program, we actually talk to a lot of young people who are experiencing sexual violence in their relationships and in their families and even in schools. And just all sorts of sexual assault on the street. So that's something that generally is not talked about in our communities and something that we really began to see at Sakhi. And then in my work doing community outreach, I actually have a lot of access to all kinds of people. So I hear a lot about sexual violence happening covertly in workplaces and in stores and in, you know, even in community gatherings and in settings and temples where young women or even married women are violated in all sorts of ways and in ways that we don't really like to hear about, but are really happening.
That's amazing. I mean, I feel like you just covered so many spaces from the home to work to being outside on the streets to your intimate partner. And, you know, that's a lot of places where we have to think about our own safety and bodily integrity. I mean, I think we know that also in terms of the majority of sexual assault does actually happen by people we know. I mean, you know, we often see in the media stranger rape as, you know, the thing that we talk about the most, but actually the majority of sexual assault is by perpetrators that victims know. And in fact, with juveniles, about 93% of girls who are sexually assaulted know the perpetrator. So I think it's great that you have this new youth program in terms of thinking about how we can address sexual violence and incest and, you know, other kinds of violence that may happen from the extended family, which is, you know, certainly an issue in our community. So I think we've raised a lot of issues in terms of sexual violence and, you know, the challenges. And I don't want to leave out also maybe talking a little bit about violence that happens in same-sex partnerships. And maybe you can speak to a little. I know there was a couple of speakers during the event who talked about that and the ways in which our understandings of gender also reinforce violence that happens in across our communities. And I don't know what your experience or thinking around that issue is.
Sure. At Sakhi, we are becoming very intentional about being more open in our work to address gender-based violence, not just violence against women. And for us, too, it took some time to be able to hold that as part of our work. You know, some of that starts with training our own selves, training our staff to ask all the right kind of questions about how violence is experienced or what a person, even asking about a person's gender identity is not a very common practice. It has not been, I think.
Or assuming, like, for example, to make it concrete, like assuming somebody is in a heterosexual relationship.
Correct.
Or something like that, right?
Yes, exactly. So in our South Asian community, especially, I feel like there's very little talked about and very little acknowledgement of same-sex violence, whether it's our general community's acceptance of same-sex relationships or even within same-sex relationships, the fear and the taboo of openly talking about violence in relationships. But I think largely the community's sort of in acceptance of or lack of acknowledgement that same-sex relationships are just, you know, just as common as any other type of or as common as a heterosexual relationship. I think that kind of silence can be very debilitating. We know from, you know, from Sakhi's work that we know that violence is often underreported. And I think it's more so underreported in same-sex relationships. In the South Asian community, for example, I think that a lot of our listeners might identify, especially young listeners might identify with the fact that whether it's talking about their relationships or talking about being in a relationship with someone of their same sex and gender is a real challenge in our families and our communities. And so that kind of silence just creates more and more room for violence to go unaddressed.
Sonia Munshi is a recent PhD whose research focused on domestic violence in South Asian communities in the United States, and she has been a former director at Manavi, She spoke about some of the solutions to ending violence.
First, I want to hold the specific horror of the sexual violence inflicted upon Jyoti Singh Pandey within a bigger context of patriarchal violence, based in ideas that there are only two genders and that men are superior to women. Sexual violence occurs as part of a lifetime continuum of risks and vulnerabilities that come out of ideas about normal gender, gender roles, and gender expectations. These ideas begin before birth through practices such as sex-selective abortions or other less extreme reactions to expectations of boy children or girl children, and continue until death, so thinking about things like the treatment of widows. Over the course of a lifetime, gender-based violence can look like intimate partner violence or domestic violence, child sexual abuse, sexual harassment, deprivation of education or other opportunities or material resources, community rejection of divorcees, homophobia, transphobia towards LGBTQ people, forced marriage, etc. Survivors of sexual abuse are of all ages, genders, and other identities, and most survivors have or will experience other forms of violence, perhaps not as extreme or perhaps even more traumatic over the course of their lives. Sexual violence is not an isolated or exceptional form of violence. It is in many ways a very normal practice of patriarchy, and what feels particularly powerful about this moment is that we can hold a visible and collective outrage that this normal is wrong, this broader normal of gender-based violence, and that this normal needs to change. So in this moment, we're really being offered the opportunity to open up space, to hold both sadness, grief, outrage, anger, and also to create dialogues and actions that move us forward.
Chai Jindasurat, a national organizer at the Anti-Violence Project, spoke about the diversity of people affected by sexual violence.
In addition to the epidemic of sexual violence against women, LGBTQ people, children, men, and boys are also survivors and victims of sexual violence. LGBTQ communities do not want to discuss sexual violence that happens in our communities. And non-LGBTQ communities do not recognize that sexual violence is a problem that LGBTQ people face. And there are many myths about LGBTQ violence, including the myth that men cannot be raped, the myth that women cannot perpetrate sexual violence, and the myth that LGBTQ people are inherently sexually deviant. LGBTQ sexual violence can also take unique forms, such as LGBTQ people who are targeted because of their sexual orientation or gender identity, like the practice of corrective rape. LGBTQ people face barriers in reporting, including the disbelief from police and other first responders, as well as homophobic, biphobic, and transphobic attitudes.
I want to turn to thinking about what we can do to make a difference, because we've laid out so many issues. But first, we're going to take an opportunity to have a commercial break, and then we're going to dive into some of the ways we can all work together to address this mass of problems that we've talked about.